The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money and Mission, here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things that you own are actually helping you live out what you really feel called to in your heart? There is so much peace of mind when you sense that your money is aligned with your values and convictions, as well as your financial goals. And there really, really is peace of mind when you know deep down that your financial goals are in sync with your values and convictions. And there's so much potential for anxiety and worry and everything that goes along with that when you sense that your money's not aligned with your values and convictions.
That's right, James. But that's easier said than done. There's so much financial information coming at us every minute of every day. It can actually be overwhelming. Terminology, ideas and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services. Keeping all of this information straight can be downright confusing and possibly even scary.
Yeah, you're so right there. And when you're confused or scared, you simply aren't making good decisions.
No.
And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be, and it can hurt you pretty badly as well. Well, welcome to episode 40.
That's right.
Money and Mission. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio. Each week, in the first part of our show, we'll talk about some current financial events so you'll have a better understanding of what some of the terminology and events actually mean.
And then part of the way through the show, we get to our weekly puzzle, my favorite part of the show.
Puzzle is if we're going to remember.
The puzzle is as if we remember to actually do it. That's right. But it's a brain teaser. It's a puzzle that we share with you, and sometimes it falls under the category of a dad joke. We don't know usually if the puzzle is actually going to be interesting, but it's something that caught our attention, and so we share it with you each week.
That's right. So, James, let's jump into our show this week. What did you think was a financial news highlight throughout this past week?
Yeah, so as of the time that we're recording this, I wouldn't call this a headline just yet, but every month an organization called the Conference Board releases something that they refer to as leading economic indicators.
And who is this Conference Board again?
Who is this conference? This is Conference Board. You can go to a website, www.conference-board.org. And the Conference Board really is an organization that just compiles statistics about various parts of our economy. And they've divided these statistics into three basic headings. They call them leading indicators, coincident indicators, and lagging indicators.
So like taking a temperature of the economy?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So leading indicators, and I know, you know, we've talked about this before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an economy is a series of transactions, and one thing always leads to another, leads to another, leads to another, right? So how do you decide that something is really leading or lagging, right? It just depends where we are in the business cycle. But the Conference Board has defined things as leading, coincident, or lagging. So leading indicators are really things like looking at how many hours on average people are working in manufacturing jobs.
Mm.
The thought really is that if hours are up,
then more products will probably be coming out as well.
Well, more products are coming out, but that means wages are also up if people are working more hours. And if wages are up, then people have more money to spend. And more money to spend turns into sales and revenue at a business somewhere, which turns into profits.
So I mean, kind of spiderwebs out.
It spiderwebs out like
that. When the snow melts in a melting cup.
That's
and
right.
It comes down that one creek and then it starts branching out into smaller creeks and streams.
That's exactly right.
And it feeds everything else.
So it that's why they call it leading. Things like average weekly claims for unemployment. Clearly, if there's more claims for unemployment, then people aren't working as much.
Aren't manufacturing much, yeah.
That's right. When people aren't working as much, then they tend to want to spend less because they lost their job and they're, you know, being concerned about that. So if there's less spending going on, then in reverse of what we just talked about, that's sales and revenue and profits that are missing from a business somewhere. And then that's less that that business can do, and it spiderwebs out there as well. So there's actually 10 such leading indicators like that.
So what would you say the news was for leading indicators from earlier?
Well, from January, so you combine those 10 different things that are listed as leading indicators, and the basic idea is that if across the board, those 10 things in the aggregate, if they're up from where they were the previous month, then that means that the economy is generally expanding, and one might expect that, you know, maybe there would be positive investment results as a result of that expansion. But the U.S. leading economic indicator index declined in January, reversing most of the gains that had occurred in the previous 2 months. So,
okay, well,
January. So 2025 is not really off to a good start.
No.
Even
if it was off to a good start, it's not.
It's not.
From the look of this information. But what does that mean for our listeners?
Yeah. So if the year is off, one month does not make a whole year.
Sure.
Right. So you could still wind up with a decent year, but we've got 1 month gone and it looks like things have sort of slowed down a little bit economically. You know, what that really means for our listeners is if the economy slows down, that's not a guarantee that the stock market is going to do poorly. But if things are slowing down and there's not as much of an opportunity for profits, again, the trickle-down effect, you want to make sure that your portfolios are structured in a way that can, you know, benefit or at least get through the possibility of a stagnant or maybe not as robust of an economy.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point.
And we don't offer specific investment advice here on the podcast. We just try to keep track and share what this information means and realize, again, one thing leads to another. And so when you have economic data points like this, an economic data point always shows up somewhere else, kind of like that little game of whack-a-mole where, you know, you hit this froggy and another one pops up somewhere.
And like you said, maybe, you know, 1 month or one of these metrics may not ring alarm bells, but when there's 2, 3, 4, then I'm sure you start taking notice.
That's right. Yeah, if you go out to the conference board website, some of the notes out there just really indicate that, or some of the commentary out there really notes that, you know, they're kind of expecting that maybe the year will be okay. Like maybe we will have some economic growth for the year. But okay is not the same as great.
No.
Good is not the same as great. So if we're expecting a year that's good, at least we're not expecting a year that's bad.
That's true.
That's, you know, a lot to be thankful for there. But there is a chart here that we're looking at, and on the chart, I love charts.
I know you do.
Yeah. I just finished studying, you know, for the last year and a half. I was working through.
You just went through chart school.
Charts, that's right, chart school. But here, you know, the blue line on this chart is representing the leading economic index, and we can see how it's been dropping off since really, I guess, about 22. It looks like it peaked out at 22 and has been dropping off ever since. And again, that doesn't mean that it's going to stay that way, for the year, but it's been dropping off over the last couple of years. So we'll see, you know, we'll see how the year goes. Stay tuned, and just make sure that if you haven't reviewed with your advisor, or if you're not using an advisor, you're just doing it yourself, again, make sure you review your investment allocations and that you're comfortable that you're positioned for where the economy might be headed in 2025.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think we got a couple minutes here. Let's get to a couple other news stories. One I thought was interesting is, we'll see where this goes, but you know, the whole waste, fraud, and abuse, the Doge thing going on that's causing a lot of stir in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now Musk and Trump are proposing that Doge audit Fort Knox gold reserves.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How would you audit a gold reserve?
I don't know how they're auditing any of these places, to be honest, but supposedly there's a bunch of smart people involved, and Musk even says that he wants it live streamed on the internet for transparency.
Yeah. Well, that would be transparent. And, you know, whenever I think about it, when you said audit a gold reserve, it sort of brought back a picture of when I was a teenager, and I guess it was like a junior in high school, and there was a garage and a mechanic that needed some help inventorying the stuff that he had in his back room. And I spent like a couple of days helping this guy.
Count it all up.
Yep. There I was with this little clipboard, you know, counting off how many little nuts and bolts he had of different sizes. And I don't know how you would do that with like gold bars at Fort Knox.
Well, I'm sure this is a little bit more costly, because at Fort Knox, there's $426 billion worth of gold alone, which I think is a little more than half of the gold reserves that we had. The last known full audit hasn't happened since 1953, with a partial review taking in 74.
Right.
And the issue gained renewed attention after Australia had discovered that counterfeit gold was in the Bank of England's reserve.
So, counterfeit gold.
Yeah.
Counterfeit gold.
I guess they got duped.
That's kind of unsettling.
They were bamboozled.
Bamboozled counterfeit gold. But, you know, you've got all those gold bars, and again, I'm just sitting here. I can't get rid of that picture in my head of the clipboard and counting up all the little parts, right? So it'd be interesting to see if that actually, you know, turns into a live stream type of event.
That would be a boring live stream.
Yeah, that would be a boring live stream.
All right, folks. Well, we're out of time in this segment. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our supporters. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And our guest today is John Eisenberg from the National Christian Foundation. Just say hi, John, so everybody knows there's actually someone here.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be part of your show.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
We were talking about this right before we got started with the segment today. That is a real radio voice.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. No pressure.
No pressure. That's right. So, I mean, really, we're looking forward just to getting to know you today and National Christian Foundation. But I think if there's one thing, really, that you would hope that people would get out of our conversation today, mm-hmm. it would be
giving is a source of joy.
That there's joy in giving.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's so true.
There's so much that happens in our life in general, and the topsy-turviness of things. And right. I know very few grumpy, generous people. There's a lot of joy in giving.
That's right. A lot of joy in giving. But still, this word or phrase, planned giving, I mean, that just sounds scary.
Yeah, it can be intimidating. Sometimes planned giving gets associated with death, and who wants to think about their own death? Nobody wants to think about their death.
Or the idea of losing.
That's right, Joe. Right.
What you've worked for.
Is there any way you could put like an effect on that planned giving? That's right. It just sounds so heavy. So people, I think there's people get scared.
Yeah,
and then they just don't plan to give.
Right. A lot of things happen by default.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I understand that, but it's complicated. You're thinking about your own death. You're trying to figure out what can I predict the future? I can't necessarily predict the future.
You're in family, leaving a legacy.
Right. Do my wife and I have the same priorities? Do we have the same goals? How much do we want to get into that? Me and my kids, my grandkids.
That's right.
What are the people going to say about me?
That's right.
Are people going to ask me for more money? I mean, there's so many different
yes.
dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And truly, when you think planned giving, again, there is this side of or this end of the spectrum that involves what happens when we're gone, leaving a legacy and so on and so forth. But just as we're getting into this topic, on the other side of the spectrum is something as simple as planning, let's say, to pack boxes of food twice a month over at the food bank.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right? Exactly.
Which has nothing to do with what happens when you're gone. It just involves planning to yeah. give.
And you're still yeah. helping provide.
Exactly. No, I think that I've heard someone, PDOX, has talked about an acrostic life, that it's labor, influence, finances, and expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
to think about all the different things that have been given to you,
right.
that you have, that you could offer to other people around you.
That's right.
And it's so much more. Mm-hmm. You know, you could go spend a couple hours with your kids packing food boxes.
That's right.
And you've had to plan because you got to get your kids together.
That's right.
But it's not a big deal, and it actually is shaping your children in a fun memory.
That's right.
And it helps folks realize, like, what resource do I have to give?
That's right.
Right? Because I remember at church a couple months back, the pastor was talking about how can we help the church, right?
And mm-hmm.
some of you might have finances. Some of you may have free time. Some of you may be better at ministering.
Yep.
So how can you get involved and help?
Exactly.
That's
And I think the joy comes from we're pushed to recognize all the things that have been given to us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We're invited to recognize all the things that have been given to us, and how can we make the most of that?
That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. So we have this spectrum of, on one side, on one end of the spectrum, planned giving being as simple as just planning to give some time, all the way to the other end of the spectrum where it's a complex transaction mm-hmm. that takes 10 years to plan.
Right.
Right. And then everything in between.
Correct.
So really, sometimes, though, people just, they don't get involved in planned giving because they feel like they don't have the financial resources.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where there's this aha moment, I think, that happens to many people when they realize, I think I actually have more than I thought I did.
Right.
Right. I may actually have something to plan with.
Right. Well, yeah. And I think even just this acrostic, the labor, influence, finances, experience, helps you think about all the things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when we think about giving, we're saying, well, I'm going to write a check, or I'm going to get on Venmo, or I'm going to do a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And most people really only have 10% of their assets are in cash where you'd use a Venmo or a check.
Right.
Most people have a lot more than that they may not understand. Things that don't look like you could put them in an offering basket are, you have them.
You have them.
You just need someone to help you see that you can make that gift.
To figure out how to get that from point A to point B.
Right.
That's right. List that again. Venmo? Like how does
well
different
I'm,
payment services
just payments
well no
PayPal
but we
Venmo.
think about cash. We just immediately think about what's the cash that I can give, and
right.
I don't have a lot of cash. And I mean, for the last number of years, inflation's an issue, economic uncertainty, what's the future going to hold.
Mm-hmm. One thing I never thought of is the other day we're holding a yard sale
right.
at our church, and they asked the congregation, bring anything that's still in good condition, you know, things that you would have just thrown out. Donate them to the church, we'll sell them and raise that money for programs.
That's right.
Yeah, so but it's also like people
and I never
have
thought of that. Yeah.
Right. But people have stocks. They might not realize mm-hmm. that there's some ways that you could give an appreciated stock that
right.
You know, you didn't pay necessarily as much. You could have a significant impact from the current value of the stock that you didn't pay for.
And right. a significant tax savings as
right.
well.
That's right.
Exactly. There's real estate.
And
there's
real estate and business interests.
Yeah, all kinds of things that you might not realize.
And that would be like through a donor advised fund. I wasn't sure if you were planning to get into that a little deeper, James, but definitely
yeah,
let
mean,
people
we'll,
know.
I think we'll talk about donor advised
okay,
funds.
Great.
Absolutely, yeah. And classic cars.
Oh,
I just had to say that, right?
Auction that baby off for a good cause.
That's right. Because of that awesome vehicle that you just commandeered recently there, Eric. Mm-hmm.
Especially if it was passed down and the younger generation might not be their thing, but you know, it still has some value.
Yeah. So the point is that...
So non-cash gifts.
The point is that anything, almost, mm-hmm. right? Anything could become a viable gift at yeah. some point. Translating that from the stuff that's on our balance sheet, our personal balance sheets, to a charitable cause.
Exactly.
At some
I just
point.
Thought of like medical equipment, wheelchairs, mm-hmm. things of that nature. After folks pass, that can go to other folks in need mm-hmm. without much resources.
Right. Yeah. I actually know, you know, a number of years ago there was a dentist. I believe she was a dentist who was upgrading her office, mm-hmm. and she donated some of her used dental equipment mm-hmm. to a dental clinic in, I think it was the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
And so again, there was a
way. Big ticket items.
That's right. Way of using stuff that was very usable, but something needed to happen to it, and some creative planning got it from point A to point B.
Exactly.
So all these things that we just don't think about, I think we just, it's easy to be intimidated by that word planned giving. But if we just...
But we tell folks all the time they need to be intentional.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And write down their goals.
Write down their goals. And then really build understanding, too. So that, as you said, it's not just about cash.
Yeah.
It's really working at understanding the scope of possibilities yeah. that could be involved in that.
Well, and I think there's opportunities for families in that as well, because husband and wife may not be on the same page. Parents and children may not be on the same page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talked about how you can get into a default posture of things just happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the opportunity for planning is really to say, what are some of the values that we have as a family? Are there things that we want to have as a legacy for right. being who we are as a family?
Right.
What it
right.
means for us to be members of the church and committed to that? How does that shape
That's right.
our family identity? And that actually can bring joy and unity over generations.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it takes a little bit of effort. You have to think about it. You have to put some time in the calendar for it. So you have to plan for it.
You have to plan for it.
But it really can knit the family together in a more intimate, more unified way.
That's right. And really to not be afraid of having that conversation either.
No.
I you know, it's possible that there's a fear factor involved at some point in time along the way. Well, I'm really looking forward to, you know, unpacking this topic.
Yeah.
We've got time for the puzzler. We can keep going a little bit. Two till the puzzler.
Oh, you were putting two fingers up.
2 minutes till we got to wrap up the conversation 2 minutes. And start your favorite segment, part of the segment.
We should plan that better.
We should?
Yeah. Speaking of planning. That's right.
Ha ha.
Well, so... Maybe people are also unsure whether the charities they're thinking about can actually use their stuff.
Right. No, and I think it's important to be aware of not just what do we have, but what do people need, and what's the conduit between that. Sometimes, mm-hmm. In my background, I've had people want to donate things that it's like, you wouldn't give that to your enemy to use.
Right.
Why are you giving it to me? You should just throw that out.
That's right.
But there are other times when you can recognize, oh my gosh, this is still usable.
That's
and
right.
Would add value.
That's right. And as we get into it, I know organizations like National Christian Foundation, you know, create very real vehicles for taking stuff that is maybe has some value, but a charity can't specifically use that,
right.
bridging that gap and turning it into a usable asset.
Yeah. So I would say my background in particular is things that don't look like they fit in an offering basket that are a little sophisticated. Mm-hmm. Intellectual property, business interest, real estate, mm-hmm. Appreciated stock, IRAs.
It'd be hard to put a price on those as well, right?
Right.
Intellectual property.
Intellectual property.
So copyrights and...
Yep.
Wow.
Even things like grain. Farmers might feel like they don't have a lot that they can contribute, but mm-hmm. there can be some tax efficiency to donating grain before they sell it.
Mm-hmm.
That can really, they can do more than they think they can.
Right.
Wow. We should jump into that a little bit deeper in the next segment.
We should.
Yeah.
We really should. Well, I'm looking forward to that. This is a great topic, and we're looking forward. This time is going to fly, but we're talking with John Eisenberg from the National Christian Foundation. And when we come back from our weekly puzzler, then we'll be talking with him some more about how he got into this line of work. But it is time to do our weekly puzzle, I think.
Yes. All right, I'll do last week's. I have a chain, but I'm not a prisoner. I have a frame, but I'm not a photo. I have wheels, but I'm not a car. I have a saddle, but I'm not a horse. I have pedals, but I'm not a piano. What am I? And the answer is a bicycle.
A bicycle.
That long-winded.
That's right.
if you stuck along for that, then we're happy for you.
That's right. If you didn't listen to last week's podcast, you need to go back and listen to that. As we were talking about recycle bicycle at that point. But this week's puzzler, a real short, easy one. Why did the bicycle mechanic stop going to work one day?
Why did the bicycle mechanic stop going to work one day?
Yeah.
That should be an easy one to chew through.
A lot of answers probably. But if you think you know, send your answers to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com and we will read the correct answer on the podcast next week.
That's right. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And I am Eric.
And Joe is shaking his head.
Like, you almost forgot our show for a second.
I almost forgot the name. Now you did make me forget. Okay. We are talking today with John Eisenberg from National Christian Foundation.
And we just started getting to a good part. So.
And we've just got to the good part, and you guys are working hard to get me off track. John, you know, wow, so many things we were talking about that people can give in this topic of planned giving. But before we unpack that anymore, tell us about you. How did life conspire or whatever to bring you to a spot where you decided to make a career out of planned giving?
That's an excellent question. So I've been in the generosity space for 25 years professionally, almost 30 years in terms of something that I've been sort of just stirred by. And it really all started when I was just out of college. A number of friends and I started volunteering with some underserved communities. I went to Lehigh. We were in Bethlehem just after college. And so I was living on the south side of Bethlehem, volunteering time. And there was some Section 8 housing. There was a halfway house. There were different things. And I just, we were all feeling like the love of God in us and through us was moving us to try and love these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't making a lot of money. I was new college grad trying to make ends meet. But I found a lot of meaningful relationship with friends, so that sort of the friendship group grew because we all had this shared interest, and we all found meaning in using our we didn't have a lot of treasure, right, but our time and our talent on behalf of these communities. So that was part of the seed, and then through church, I started watching churches wrestle with, we want to do more programs to serve our congregants. We want to do more programs that would serve the local community. And I consistently heard money was an issue. And I'm like, why is money an issue? And the thing that had stood out to me, I think because I was working with underserved communities, was if the Bible talks about tithing and giving 10%, the church that I was in, given the number of congregants we had or people in the church, If they were all tithing based on the poverty line, we would double the church budget.
Hmm. Okay, wait a minute. Say that again.
Yeah.
If you were tithing based on...
So the federal government has a definition of poverty.
Yeah.
At the time, I think it was something like $14,000.
And if everyone at the church...
If everyone in the church was tithing off the gross of the federal poverty line...
The 10%.
The church budget would double, but we were struggling... And we had, I mean, it was a large church, over 2,000 members, and there were some pretty successful people at Air Products and Bethlehem Steel and other places.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some dissonance in my mind about why are these needs going unmet when the resources are in the body of Christ or in the body of believers?
Right.
And so that sort of fast forward another 5 years from that in the early 2000s, I was now working for a nonprofit. And watching this happen up close and personal and realizing how many people were not getting services that they need, how many because of this issue. And I just felt like there was something. Now, you know, my background, it's kind of, I joke with people. My dad to this day is asking, so John, do you ever use your music degree?
Oh, because you went to college for music.
I was a music and philosophy double major. Yeah. And so my dad sort of jokes with me even as recently as yesterday about do you ever use your music degree?
Sure.
But that's a whole other topic. But I basically in the early 2002-ish just felt like, no, I want to give myself. And I think on the philosophy side, it's really just been sort of animated by this concept and mm-hmm. trying to understand what are the obstacles, what are the opportunities.
Right.
And
thinking deeply on these tough issues.
And my motivation is how do we help people look forward to giving? Because giving does generate a lot of joy. And we have a lot more than we realize we have.
That's right. You know, I think it was, I forget what episode, we should look that up, but where we were talking about building giving into a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And how when you build that into a plan and then
I think it was a multi-part.
It was a multi-part.
We had one with mistakes.
That's
with
right.
With giving, if you do it the wrong way.
That's right.
How it can be very good.
That's right. But the idea was that when you build giving into your plan, then as you achieve and you accomplish the various different steps in this plan, I mean, not only are you setting yourself up for joy in giving, but there's also a real sense of accomplishment because you are meeting the goals that you set out.
Yeah.
And so you're doing that very intentionally.
And especially locally, you can see and feel the impact.
That's right.
Well, and I think that the money itself can be kind of abstract.
Mm-hmm.
When you can start seeing and sacrificing, you know, when you've got a choice between something that would be nice to have versus need to have,
mm-hmm.
and you have to make a choice between, well, I'm going to give up the nice to have for this. Like, it can be really complicated. But I think you have a sense of, no, the calling that I have is to be focused in a particular way.
Right.
It's easy to say I'm not going to do all the nice to haves, and it's more rewarding because you can say, well, this is the cause that I'm really passionate about,
mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be really laser focused in my time, my expertise, my money.
That's right.
On this thing, and so life becomes more satisfying because you've got this thing that you can watch sort of unfold in front of you.
You can watch it unfold in front of you. Yeah, and I think really, I mean, implied there is that you're doing that while you're living.
Right.
Like you're not waiting until you're gone.
No.
I mean, we'll get to planning for what happens when you're gone.
Right.
If we have time to cover that in, you know, today's episode, we'll at least hint or we'll at least scratch the surface. But here we're specifically talking about doing something while you're living.
Right.
And there's so much joy in then watching that happen in front of you.
Right.
Yeah, right. Exactly right.
No, I think, I think it might have been Ron Blue. Someone said, do your giving while you're living so you're knowing where it's going. And it was kind of a catchy phrase. And
yeah.
I think that's true, but I also think it's, you're not like, okay, so when you do it in just purely your estate, okay, maybe I have a significant amount of money and I can leave it to a favorite charity, but are you going to feel joy from that? I mean, the charity's going to be blessed and you can kind of anticipate that they're going to be blessed.
Right.
But I think the joy of actually saying, oh, look at what I got to be a part of. Look at how God was moving through me.
Right.
Absolutely.
Like when you do that after you're gone.
It's not bad. Right. I'm not gonna, like, I don't want to say it's bad, but I think you're missing out on some of what the joy could be.
Right. Yeah. I guess where I was headed with that is the only way to tell. Well, I mean, I guess philosophically, we just assume that once someone's gone, you can't feel the joy anymore. There's only one way that we could really tell. Okay, never mind. Let's not go down that road.
Depends how their legacy is left.
Depends how their legacy is laid out. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was really off track. But no, I think the point is there, that the joy in that. Really.
Yeah, and so I think for me, it's
and
really...
How do you help people like see that before they get involved, right? Like getting on a weight loss journey or becoming more healthy. Like it's like you think you will be, but you don't know until you're there. And you're like, wow, I feel so much better. Life is so much better.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think now some of it is people have maybe already made a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think sometimes the journey is about just reflecting on... What was a gift that was really meaningful to you? I mean, there was a gift that I made. I don't remember exactly when. It was probably 20 years ago. There had been an earthquake in Pakistan, and a friend told me about an opportunity to help clean water, get to remote villages. And
mm-hmm.
it wasn't, I mean, I think it might have been $500. It wasn't a huge gift, but it's probably one of the most meaningful gifts I've
And look at the impact it had.
Right. You think about what's the 10-year later opportunity of providing clean water.
And you're talking about it on the radio right now.
Right. That's a crazy opportunity. So yeah. I think it's sometimes it's reflecting on what was the gift that was meaningful and mm-hmm. how did that happen? And mm-hmm. really spending some time to say, well, it was meaningful because how did I learn about it? And then sort of bridge off of that. But the flip side of that is if you've made a gift where you're like, well, they didn't even send me a thank you letter. Mm-hmm. I want to be thanked. Yeah. Right. The tax receipt was wrong or whatever
that's
it is.
That's not where it's supposed to come from.
Right. But you can reflect on the bad experience. So sometimes I think the joyful giving is I made a gift and what was good or bad about it. But I also think I think each of us has, we're kind of wired to see something that's wrong in the world. Mm-hmm. And feel like we have to do something about mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And so how do it's a trick. So my background as in planned giving before National Christian Foundation was in fundraising. Mm-hmm. And there's a temptation in fundraising that I'm going to show you a picture that's really going to sort of twist your heart right. and get you to act.
Like those commercials.
I don't want to go that direction. I really don't want to go that direction. But it is just like, how do you keep your heart soft? How do you keep your eyes open and clear to problems around you that you're like, I can't just walk by that.
Right.
I've got to do something.
Right.
Maybe getting folks involved.
And it's just
and it's
where
a small, the needs are.
Yeah, just but it, then what can I do in a small way to begin engaging?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's, you know, it's an interesting thing because I think we inherently understand that no matter what we do, we're not going to solve all the problems. But it's kind of like that story about the man who was walking down the beach, throwing a starfish back in, and he'd throw the starfish in, and he'd throw the starfish in, and somebody was watching, this little girl, I think, was watching him do that. And after she watched him walking down the beach for about 10 minutes throwing these starfish back in, she asked him, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm throwing them back in because they're all washed up on the beach. And she said, there's thousands of these. You're never going to get to them all. You can't possibly change that. And he said, I changed it for that one.
Right.
Yeah. I changed it for that one. And right. so he did. He was doing what he could with what he had right yeah. there in front of him.
Right. Well, and I think the more that a family can get involved in that conversation, mm-hmm. you know, it might be that the husband and wife or the father and son don't have the same starfish. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. Sort of what's interesting is you get to watch, well, we share this interest or we're different in this. And that's where, you know, Scripture talks about the different parts of the body that work together.
Right.
We don't have to solve the problem by ourselves, but mm-hmm. We can meet some people that share our passions.
Right.
And we all don't have to work on the same project.
And I feel like the gift of my job is I've watched all kinds of different important work in nonprofits get funded.
Right.
And in many cases, it's like, I didn't even know there was a nonprofit that did that.
That's right.
I just get to watch all these, the way God moves through all these different families.
That's right, yeah. So we have maybe a minute or so left, but you know, you came to National Christian Foundation then, and you know, let's talk some more about that as we get into the next segment. But really connecting there and doing that professionally in a mm-hmm. really organized kind of way, mm-hmm. and I'm excited to hear about how that worked and the good things that are happening.
Yeah,
you know, because of that.
Look forward to sharing.
Yeah, so we are just about out of time here in this segment.
Yep, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll finish our conversation with John. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we're talking with John Eisenberg today from National Christian Foundation. And what a great conversation, John.
Well, thanks. I really enjoy the time with you guys.
Yeah, we are having fun. But all these different ways that people can give, and as we said, we want to kind of hear a little bit, how did you connect with National Christian Foundation?
Yeah, so National Christian Foundation was started in Atlanta in 1982 when a tax attorney was helping a client look at how they could give something that wasn't a gift of cash. Mm-hmm. And Terry Parker, our founder, started traveling around the country. As people heard about what he was able to do, people would call him and he would travel around the country. And so he just got to know families. And maybe, I think somewhere around 2005, I was at a conference where Terry Parker was sharing some of what was possible with giving things that mm-hmm. are not cash. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of intrigued, like, oh, I should call Terry sometime if as I'm raising money, maybe there's a time that I'd work with him. And then let's say around 7-8 years ago, I was working at Water Street Mission in Lancaster, and a member of my team came to me and said, well, we should really sort of lean into this question of how do you give things that aren't cash?
Right.
And so I started learning more, and I learned some from NCF and other places. And anyway, long story short, I just realized there's so much that's been entrusted to all of us. Mm-hmm. And how do we help people develop a strategy for making the most of the things that have been entrusted to us?
Yeah.
So, I knew about NCF for maybe 20 years. The office in Lancaster just started 3 years ago. What I am doing now as the president is really building a community of people that look forward to giving and that have a giving strategy. Mm-hmm. And we've hinted at this through the podcast, that a giving strategy really starts with a kind of discernment of what are my values? What does the Bible say about being generous? Mm-hmm. What are my values? How do those things line up? What kind of legacy do I want to have? But also, what are all the things that are entrusted to us? So it's the strategy starts there. Technically, we're a donor advised fund, so mm-hmm. we're like a charitable checking account for people.
A charitable checking account.
Yeah. So, you might develop a giving strategy and realize, oh, I want to be giving these non-cash assets, and we have an expertise in that. So, if that's what you've discerned, then we can help you. We can walk with your advisors, whether it's an accountant, a wealth manager, a CPA, and an attorney. Walk with your team of advisors to help you design, is it possible to give that gift? And mm-hmm. what's the most tax efficient way to make the gift? People don't give for taxes, but it matters to people.
Right.
And then ultimately, the donor advised fund is a vehicle like a checking account where the gift comes in, they get their tax deduction, and they can choose their church or the causes that they care about
right.
to write a check.
So just to kind of picture that, I mean, if I had a blank piece of paper, mm-hmm. I would draw a box maybe on one side of the paper and say, that is my stuff, mm-hmm. okay? And then I will draw a circle in the middle of that, and I would say, that is a donor-advised fund, mm-hmm. right? Now, after the circle, on the other side of the paper is a bunch of little boxes. Those mm-hmm. are all the charities, right?
Correct.
So my stuff over here from that one side of the paper can sort of make its way into the circle, the donor advised fund.
Correct.
And when that happens, I get a tax deduction.
Correct.
Because donor advised fund is a charity.
Yeah, I am a 501c3 charity from an IRS perspective.
Right, right. So now the money is sitting in the donor advised fund. It's in that circle.
Correct.
But it doesn't belong to me anymore.
No.
No, it belongs to National Christian Foundation.
Yeah, so technically, you've surrendered control to me. Mm-hmm. You've made a gift, mm-hmm. but we have I call it a charitable checking account because it's the family's giving fund.
Right.
And the family comes and says, well, I've given you this money. I would like a grant to be made to
right.
fill in the blank.
That's right. So now I come back to you and I say, I'd like some of that to go to Water Street Mission.
Yep.
Or whatever. Right. Name, you know.
Well, and if you went to our website, we have you'd log into your account online, and it looks just like any other banking institution where you're going to write a check to pay a bill. You'd log into your account. Mm-hmm. You'd see what your balance is. Maybe the distinctive for us, the IRS says that a donor advised fund can only give to another 501c3 or a church.
Right.
So there's an IRS regulation there. As a Christian foundation, we are really concerned about the organizations we grant to and their Christian faith. So
right.
we will look, if you're doing something that would be preventing the spread of Jesus, we would not make that grant.
Right.
We take seriously sanctity of life and sanctity of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to grant to an organization that was promoting abortion, for example, mm-hmm. we would not make that grant.
Right. That's, I get to check off another question here.
Our mission and our mission, vision, values as an organization would put some boundaries on where you can give.
That's right.
But it's as long as you're within the boundaries, you're the person who put the money or the mm-hmm. asset into the donor advised fund is making the decision where it goes. Right. I don't have any money to grant to anybody.
Right. Right. So that's super important to understand. We talk all the time about how important it is to align values with what your action steps are, right? And so you really do want to make sure that when you're doing giving like this, that again, there's alignment with your values and make sure to understand that donor advised fund. But then again, you come back to that circle now that's in the middle of that piece of paper, and you're saying, hey, John, or in the National Christian Foundation, I'd like to see some money going to whatever, name the direction, right? So that can happen one time,
mm-hmm.
or you can set that up to happen every month or periodically.
Yeah, right.
Right?
No, some people like to use a donor advised fund because they don't want to track lots of receipts. Maybe they're giving monthly to a lot of different organizations, and it gets really complicated when mm-hmm. it comes tax time.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have lumpy income where there's something that's happening. Maybe they get a commission or a bonus or something, and they don't know what their income is going to be every month, but they want to be generous. So there's a variety of different reasons people will put money in. Once the money is there, they give it out when they want to. I mean, from my perspective, when they feel like they're moved and will find joy in giving, then they can write that check. And if they want to set up a monthly contribution to their church, they can set it up as a monthly contribution out of the giving fund.
That's right.
If they're not maybe they know that there's a building campaign that's going to happen down the road for their church or some other organization they care about, the money can sit. And we would actually allow it to be invested so they can their money can still be invested in getting some returns until they're ready to make a gift. But they could make a one-time gift, a monthly gift. They could do it now. They could wait a couple years.
That's right.
How does NCF determine the fair market value of non-cash gifts? I'm curious about that.
Well, for an appreciated stock, it's pretty straightforward. We would just give you a receipt of whatever the median trading price is on the day of the gift. And then you know, if you give us 10 shares and it trades at $100, then you're going to be able to do your deduction. When it gets complicated, like
intellectual property,
it's intellectual property or real estate or a business interest, you have to get a qualified appraisal. So you have to work with somebody, typically a CPA, who's got an expertise in appraising the value of that entity. The qualified appraisal will come back and say, well, we think that house is worth X number of dollars. And it's not about what Zillow says, or it's not about what you sell it for. It's what the appraisal says is the fair market value.
That's backing that up.
And then you have to, you know, it's complicated. There's a Form 80, 283 you have to submit, all kinds of things.
But I'm sure you help walk right through that process with
them.
We walk with it easy.
That's what we do is we walk with families to help them execute their giving strategy. So you would get the qualified appraisal, and then when it comes tax time, you'd use the Form 80, 283 to say, well, the house was appraised at $300,000 and I gave the entire house, and so now I'm going to get a deduction of $300,000, on my taxes.
And you would then provide the supporting documentation to the CPA.
We would walk alongside. So we would our process is to share observations to the giver and to their team of advisors.
Okay.
They need to make the decision about the gift, and since we're receiving the gift, we can't be their counselor.
Mm-hmm.
We add our expertise to the team, but they need wealth managers, attorneys, accountants to help them think through, does this really make sense? What are the good and bad short-term, long-term implications?
That's right.
And we would, because we do hundreds, if not thousands, of these kinds of transactions a year,
mm-hmm.
We can tell you need to do this and you need to do that and make sure you do it correctly.
Right.
Put them in touch with the right folks.
Right. But you have mm-hmm. to, we actually can't tell you what appraiser to use, but we can tell you these are appraisers that people have used, mm-hmm. for example.
That's right. Yeah. And so it's so important because, again, the more complex the gift becomes, then you really do it's advisable to have a good, solid team of advisors that can help develop and understand the different dynamics, you know, involved with that. I really, really like that thing about intellectual property, because I have this boatload of
patents on
incredible ideas that I think are worth a lot of money.
Really, just getting to know you. I'm not surprised by that.
Joe's shaking his head. All right. So, if your advisor, if you're working with an advisor that doesn't know how to do this, you can put them in touch with National Christian Foundation. Certainly, whenever we're working with clients in our office.
And if you don't have an advisor and you want to get involved to help National Christian Foundation, reach out to us.
That's right. You know, we help people do this kind of work all the time. And John, I know your office has, on occasion worked with us, and we find that input to be really, really valuable as well. But National Christian Foundation does have a website.
Yep, ncfgiving.com.
Right. So if you just want to go to ncfgiving.com, you can just read all kinds of information about the things we're talking about here on the podcast today. John, this was great. I mean, we are so out of time here. And I feel like there's so much more that we could be talking about.
Yeah, no, I feel privileged to be on the podcast with you today. What we do is build communities where people can wrestle with these things together and then share our observations. And, we walk with people, so maybe there's an opportunity to walk with you as well.
That's right, yeah. Well, John Eisenberg with National Christian Foundation
Thank you so much for joining us today. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, has been our guest, and we'll look forward to having you back later in the year. And we are almost out of time.
That's right. This was a great episode, episode 40.
Eric's got the clock up, and it's counting down.
Well, I've got to keep you guys in line.
That's right.
Well, thanks for tuning in this week. You have been listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.